lessons from Japanese business culture on how to deal with a crisis.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Toyota today said because of power outages and other disruptions, it's going to keep its Japanese factories closed for at least another week. Many other Japanese auto plants are still shut down after the earthquake and tsunami there, not to mention, of course, the nuclear crisis that's going on right now. Those disasters have sent Japan to a near breaking point. It was already buried by debt and squeezed by recession. But the Japanese citizen and worker perseveres, and generations of the culture there demand it. David Weinstein is with the Center on Japanese Economy and Business at Columbia University, and he's with us now. Good morning, David.
Good morning to you.
Japanese business culture is pretty distinct, right? I mean, does it hold up under this stress of a major disaster?
I think so. Japan is a country that suffered a large number of catastrophic events, both earthquakes and the bombing of their cities. And Japanese businessmen and the Japanese people in general quite prepared for these kinds of events, or at least as prepared as one can possibly be. It's a testament to that preparedness that if you talk to people in Tokyo, the situation is relatively calm.
We keep hearing that, you know, the Japanese are very resilient people, that they can bounce back from disasters such as this one. What is it about the Japanese culture that sort of helps them along?
I think they value a Japanese word, which is gambaru, which is to persevere.
Mm-hmm.
The sense that you can bear the unbearable is very strong in Japan. And also, I think psychologically, they've been expecting a major earthquake for years. They've dealt with these in the past. They know with a certain probability that these are coming and there will be more down the line.
David Weinstein with the Center on Japanese Economy and Business over at Columbia University in New York. David, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. Markets are lower right now, off by more than 1%. The Dow down 134 points at 11,720. In Asia, the Nikkei shot up about 6% today. The government this morning said housing construction starts fell by the biggest number in 27 years. A snapshot on wholesale inflation is out today. The producer price index showed an increase in food and energy costs, i.e. gas. But aside from those things, inflation is still relatively tame. The Federal Reserve concurred and kept interest rates near zero. Marketplace's David Gura has more.
Like many economists, Hamilton College professor Ann Owens scrutinizes statements from the Fed.
The tone of this is much more optimistic than it was in January.
The Fed said the economic recovery is on a firmer footing. Unemployment is down, spending is up, and so is business investment. The central bank has kept interest rates low, and it'll continue to buy hundreds of millions of dollars of treasury bonds. But the housing market hasn't recovered, and commodity prices are volatile.
If one of the things that, say, is driving oil prices is the instability in the Middle East, well, the Fed can't do anything about that.
And Martin Neil Bailey of the Brookings Institution says the Fed isn't in a position to react to the disaster in Japan.
They have pretty much pulled out all the stops already.
But he says it's important to remember what happened after other disasters, like Hurricane Katrina and 9/11.
They typically don't have much effect on GDP. It's actually quite hard to see any impact of those events.
He predicts the Japanese economy may suffer for a quarter or two, but when the country starts to rebuild, there'll be a surge in public spending and investment, and that could benefit the U.S. economy. In Washington, I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation.com, helping small business owners, professionals, and executives monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations. Reputation.com. And by Progressive Insurance, with Snapshot, a personalized program that bases rates on mileage and safe driving habits. Learn more at Progressive.com. Sustainability coverage is supported in part by the Candida Fund, furthering values that contribute to a healthy planet.
Instead of renting out and streaming movies and TV series, Netflix may be getting into show business in its own right. According to a report today in the entertainment blog Deadline Hollywood, Netflix is trying to edge out HBO and AMC for a deal to remake the British political drama House of Cards. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is with us live this morning to talk about it. Good morning, Mitchell.
Hi, Steve.
How's this going to be different from what Netflix already does?
Well, if Netflix lands this deal, it'll be putting up the money and it'll be millions of dollars to produce the 26-episode original series. It'll have Kevin Spacey, by the way.
Mm.
That would mean that Netflix is trying to bigfoot onto the turf of cable networks like HBO, broadcast networks like NBC. Until now, Netflix has been a rebroadcaster, so it's been second or third in line. They're trying to be first.
All right, first. So why do this if you're Netflix, though, Mitchell? I mean, they're already in good business and good cash flow, right?
Right, right. And, you know, they crushed Blockbuster with their mail-in stream model. They're clearly the leader, but like they say, it's sharks out there. I mean, you know, especially in Hollywood, you swim or you die. There's tons of competition for Facebook. I mean, for Netflix, Amazon and Facebook. Also, the cable networks are gunning for them. According to Philip Swan of TVPredictions.com, Netflix wants to get out ahead and become a Hollywood player on its own.
So when they go into meetings, now, let's say with the Time Warner that owns HBO, and Netflix can say, well, we will give you the rights to House of Cards. You can have them on HBO before anyone else if you give us the right to, let's say, Empire before anyone else.
So that's competition but also opportunity for something like HBO. It could give ideas to other big players, let's say like iTunes and YouTube, that Swan says could also try to get into producing original content if Netflix succeeds.
All right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman. Thanks, Mitchell.
You're welcome.
And finally, a businessman in China just got paid gobs of money for a red Tibetan Mastiff puppy named Big Splash, making the pup the world's most expensive dog. In China, Tibetan Mastiffs have become something of a status symbol, and the coal baron who bought Big Splash paid $1.5 million for that status. So you gotta ask, who's walking whom? What does a red Tibetan Mastiff look like? You can check out our website, marketplace.org, for that. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. On Twitter, at Radio Chio, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
The fate of the Russian economy is closely linked to the Russian people, and the fate of the Russian people is up in the air.
Our government is at the crossroads. If they do nothing with alcohol and tobacco, the demographic problems would increase.
Telltale signs of a shrinking population. I'm Kai Rizdal. The high costs of poor health in Russia. Next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.